What's up, guys, and welcome back to the show. Before we get started, I'd just like to express my thanks and gratitude to the sponsors which support this podcast. I'm very selective with regards to the brands I work with and will only ever work with those which I would use myself. River and CoinKite are two such stellar Bitcoin-only brands. If you already know about how they can help you to grow and secure your Bitcoin wealth respectively, skip ahead 70 seconds. If not, keep listening. CoinKite, first and foremost, makes products that help you take secure self-custody of your Bitcoin. Their flagship product, the ColdCard Hardware Wallet, has been a favorite of many Bitcoiners for many years. Reservations are also now open for the ColdCard Q1, which takes all the awesome features of the MK4 and adds a full QWERTY keyboard, QR code scanner, large LCD screen, battery power, and a ton more. If you've been waiting to get your Bitcoin off exchanges or are looking to migrate to a multisig solution, CoinKite has you covered. Beyond that, there's a ton of other goodies available at their store for using, gifting, and generally adorning your home or office with more awesome Bitcoin stuff. My personal favorite being the Block Clock series. Check it all out at CoinKite.com. River is the place to build your Bitcoin wealth in the U.S. You can take the emotion out of Bitcoin accumulation by setting up a regular dollar cost average purchase with zero fees. You can buy lump sums, and you can even buy your own mining rigs and have them take care of all the hassles as you watch the SAT stream in. For the developers and entrepreneurs out there, be sure to check out River's Lightning service, which allows for Lightning payments to be built into applications without having to run any Lightning infrastructure yourself. River has a brilliant, principled, and committed team which has truly built a best-in-class solution for growing and managing your Bitcoin wealth. Learn more about them at river.com today.
Let's do it.
Jared.
All right. Thanks.
How you doing?
Pretty good. How about you, John?
I'm doing great, man. I love the tahini shirt. I think on your Twitter profile, I see a hat on your avatar too. So you're obviously
he's a friend of mine. Guys. So, we're both from Ontario. So
nice. They seem to be doing super well lately.
They're just,
every time I look at their Twitter handle, they're like opening new stores.
That guy's a marketing genius, man. Let me tell you, like he's taken that place from nothing. Like, it's just a small chain from Ontario, but they're recognized all over the world and they're expanding faster than like any other restaurant I can think of. Like,
it's awesome. Really, do you know how many stores they have now or restaurants they have?
25, I think.
25.
Yeah. They've expanded into Florida too now, I think. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's incredible, man. The first franchise restaurant chain on a Bitcoin standard.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's going to work out well.
I think so. Like, there's people in America demanding for it too.
Oh, I'm sure it's only a matter of time. I'm sure they have their eyes on it. Well, Jared, you hit me up on the Calendly link that I put out and scheduled yourself in for a chat. And I looked into some of your stuff, some of your writing, and you wrote a post on Substack, which was called Acceleration Theory. And this has been a concept that many people have touched on, but I've never really gotten into a longer discussion about it. So I thought maybe this was the opportunity to do so. So if you wanted to, any form of introduction you wanted to give about yourself or any details you want to share share, and then we can break into it.
Probably younger than your typical guest. I'm only 20 years old. Really got into Bitcoin about 3 years ago in 2020. And I was always good at writing. I was just always good at English class in school. So and as a polymath, I find it's just a great way to incorporate all your interests and piece it together. And when you're writing, you gain a deeper understanding for it. And
absolutely.
Just in our local circle of Bitcoiners here in Ontario, we'd go for meetups and stuff. And about a year ago, it started coming up as a joke. Like, if you want hyper Bitcoinization, you should be voting for Trudeau, right? Like, they orange pill more people than anyone else. And it was just a joke at first, but it really developed. And I have to give credit to my friend Mark Ragnar on Twitter. I forget his exact handle, Final Denominator or something like that. I can link that after. But we really developed this idea into like the philosophical concept that people aren't going to learn through reason, right? Like, you could give someone the Bitcoin standard and say, read this, but most people aren't going to read that. It takes a certain type of person to even be able to go through that whole book and actually understand those concepts, right? Like, I don't think using language and reason is the best way to orange pill people. because there's so many different ways you could put it, right? Like you can't put it into one sentence about why you need Bitcoin. People are going to need to learn through a hard experience, the collapse of fiat, that Bitcoin is the only, Bitcoin is the only option, right?
Yeah, well, that's the theory, right? And I think it's an interesting one to discuss because, you know, as you say, I think necessity is the mother of all invention, change, you know, adoption, that kind of stuff. Doesn't mean it doesn't happen in other ways, but it's probably the most, it's the fastest way to achieve a change in behavior is necessity. Yeah. So from that point of view, I get it. You know, when you bring up something like, well, if you really adhere to acceleration theory, then you have to support someone like Trudeau. Like, just, I have a gut reaction to that, which is just one of disgust, you know? So it's difficult to, have them come together in a definitive action, right? Because on the one hand, you want to say, well, yeah, I think the world would benefit from adopting Bitcoin as fast as possible. But I also don't want to subject myself or my family or my, you know, my peers to this again. And do I have an influence in that? Now, there's another discussion there about, you know, democracy and how much impact you really have and all that kind of stuff. Hit me with the general theory.
I would say to that, it's like, think of it like the classical ethical argument of, if there's a train, right? And you have the control of the track, you can pull a lever and divert the train, and you have 10 people lined up on the train track, you know, evenly spaced out. And if the train keeps going a mile up the track, it'll run over those 10 people. Or you could pull the lever, divert the track, and run over one person right now, right? Like, you feel responsible for it because you took direct action, pulled the lever, and one person died. But if you didn't do anything, you might not feel guilty about it in the moment because you're like, oh, I didn't do anything. But then 10 people get ran over in the future, right? Like, allowing fiat to continue going on could hurt more people in the long run. And it's, you know, low time preference thinking. Like, it's people's children, grandchildren that are going to get hurt if fiat continues going on.
You know, that particular example is an interesting one, which I think about a lot, you know, because I try to understand which choice I would make and why I would make it. And I'm actually leaning towards, like, so you're in this position and you could say, well, you could, what are the options? Pulling the lever so that it hits one instead of 10.
Yeah.
Or is doing nothing an option in this scenario? So just letting the train continue
nothing,
on its track.
Doing nothing would be letting the train run over 10 people, which is what, like, you're doing a lot. Because if you vote conservative, right, it's just backpedaling the system. They're going to, some politicians, they co-opt Bitcoin. They're like, yeah, I agree with Bitcoin, but they're still a part of the system. It's still, they're still a politician that's still just going to let the current system to continue. And what I think Bitcoiners really want is freedom from the state. We're all anti-status, right? The people that really consider themselves Bitcoiners, because there's Bitcoiners like, I think, you and I, that are philosophical for the concept of take money away from the state. And then there's not real Bitcoiners, the Bitcoiners that are like, oh, I'm going to sell it 100K. I'm going to pump my own bags. They don't really give a shit. They're just in it for the money. And the, like, true Bitcoin maximalists who are driven by, like, I'm not in it for even to make money. I want to separate money from the state. I want freedom. I want self-sovereignty. And that's the best way to do that, is for the system to collapse. And people, the people that are like us, fit that archetype of, like, a Sigma, right? Like, for example, we're like very interest-driven people. We get attached to a concept. We dive deep into it. We like to learn. We always went against the grain. Like, we weren't ever really governable, right? We were always free thinkers. So you get that. And then people like us get introduced to Bitcoin. We go down the rabbit hole. We are actually down to spend 1,000 hours researching it, while other archetypes aren't interested in doing that. The only way those archetypes will learn is through the uncomfortable experience of, oh shit, I need a wheelbarrow to go to the store to buy a soda, which is what happens in third world countries, where their governments have been abusing that power for so long. They abuse the money printer and they didn't have a choice. It's either, you know, I get on Bitcoin or I have to take a literal wheelbarrow to go buy a can of soda.
Yeah. Well, let's come back to that point about kind of the influence of politics on acceleration, acceleration theory, let's say. But the issue I have with the thought experiment is I don't know if I have the moral authority to condemn anyone to death, you know? Mm-hmm. And so in that particular, and also there's the question of how do you, like, are we just in a strict materialist assessment of the value of an individual to say, oh, well, one dying is better than 10 dying. And yeah. Like, is the value of an individual finite or is it infinite and divine? I mean, if it's the latter, how do you really compare, you know, one versus 10 versus 100? And so when I'm confronted with that thought exercise, I feel like, you know, even though my compulsion would, of course, to be, well, save the 10, right?
Yeah.
I think what I land on is abstention, as icky as that sounds. And, you know, a corollary that's perhaps relevant, you know, and top of mind for a lot of us is a lot of during the COVID stuff, you know, a lot of the pro-vax sort of arguments was, well, you know, the vax might kill, you know, 1 out of 100, but COVID kills 2 out of 100. So ipso facto, everyone should take the vaccine. Yeah. And I have a, you know, I disagree entirely with that way of assessing, you know, how one makes decisions and how, and of course, I totally disagree with that decision should be imposed on others. But in the realm of policy, in the realm of, you know, the way things were executed, that was in effect what was happening. You know, the people were being coerced and, you know, these things were being imposed upon them. And of course, much of the intensity of that is being walked back now in a sort of revisionist history, but we know what it was like. And so I think abstention, I think I land there because I don't think I have the moral authority to condemn anyone to death. And that's what I'm doing by pulling the lever.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but fiat will collapse anyways, right? And the longer out of it collapsing involves more authoritarian measures, more like it'll just be more pain and suffering stretched out over a longer period of time with more authoritarian measures, right? And when when tyranny is implemented slowly, it's like a frog boiling in water, right? Like mm-hmm. also slowly, they don't realize it. People become accustomed to it. It just gives them more time to brainwash people. Like it's the future of humanity that we have at stake here. If Bitcoin doesn't win and it doesn't win soon, like humanity could be screwed. We could just be sent to more cycles of authoritarian empires.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you're wrong. You know, one of the issues which we always have to contend with is we may be wrong about Bitcoin. Obviously, I don't think we are, you know, but if we are, then all, you know, then that strategy is, you know, probably it undermines that strategy because what you could, perhaps the incremental impact that you might've been able to have through other means, which you abdicated in deference to acceleration theory, if you're wrong, you know, makes the situation worse, let's say. And so there's, you know, for that reason, you know, maybe that's a reason to, well, maybe that's a strike against that sort of approach. And the other one is like, we really, and again, I'm playing devil's advocate because I'm trying to figure out, oh, yeah, you know, where I land on this. But the other thing is we don't really know, like how bad could things get if, you know, you go full bore into acceleration theory? I mean, a potential, let's just put it to the end of the spectrum, is thermonuclear war and the entire, you know, extinction of the species. If yeah. things, you know, if everyone just votes for the burn it down sort of as fast as possible yeah, thing, it's like, it went too far and everyone's dead.
Leadership, right?
What's that?
It would be like the acceleration of the incompetence of our leadership.
Yeah. And yeah. that has dire consequences. Yeah. That could have dire consequences. And so, you know, given maybe those two things alone, I'm sure there's more. I, you know, part of me thinks, and it's hard to, you know, it's hard to determine which is the rational mind and which is the emotional, but part of me thinks, you know, press in as much as possible on amplifying the benefits of this thing. And not just like, you know, because I think you're right. A lot of people aren't going to be receptive to the arguments made in the Bitcoin standard. Yeah. The case that I always make is way more people are receptive to showcasing the benefits of a well-lived life, let's say, you know, because like nobody cares about monetary history. Everybody cares about safety, security, prosperity, options, love, relationships, health, all those sorts of things.
And so like, I'm, you know, and I'm somewhat idealistic, you know, by nature, but I'm of the mind that if we can really showcase what the benefits of this catalyst or this element in our lives actually is, perhaps that accelerates people being drawn into something rather than people running away from something. Now, in the reality, it's going to be both, but I try to place my efforts on the former, because I, you know, it's a more positive way to live life, let's say, because, you know, orienting your mind toward almost feeding the things that you are ethically or principally or ideologically against is just creates an internal tension in a sense, I feel. Yeah. So yeah. What do you think about those three examples?
I think a lot of it just comes from the concept of like delayed gratification, right? Or just doing the hard thing first, like take the hard thing now. And I just think people learn through experiences like that. Like, I drew a lot of, I know you're a psychonaut. I mean, I'm into psychedelics. I consider myself a psychonaut as well. And like, you can read all the books you want about something. You can learn all you want about something, but are you really going to make a change in the things that you can logically decide, I don't like a behavior that I'm participating in. But then, you know, you have an intense psychedelic experience and you come to the realization, because then you're not unable to escape it. You have to sit there and live with it all, that I should make changes to that behavior, right? So I don't think people will really learn unless they get hit with a hard and fast negative consequence of something and then are forced to change it. And also, like, when fiat collapses, right? People are going to be the only people that have enough capital to start new businesses will be Bitcoiners. So you'll have to go work for someone that has Bitcoin. That's the way you'll make Bitcoin. And then you'll kind of realize, once you're being paid in Bitcoin, this is a whole lot better than fiat. Like, why did we ever use a money with some old lady's face on it that infinite other copies exist? Like, people will learn the norm. That's how the normies will learn about Bitcoin. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, absolutely. Learning through pain is, you know, one of the primary ways of learning. I guess what we're discussing here is pain the best teacher, or is inspiration, you know, the best reformer of behavior, let's say. And as you say, I mean, like the growth crisis, right? The confronting that thing that you didn't know was inside of you, or you hadn't really confronted before, and it's scary and it's disrupting and it's disintegrating. But if you can face it down and you can engage in that process, then what lies on the other side is a more, you know, strong, integrated individual.
Yeah.
So, but I guess, you know, one of the questions would be, what does it look like in practice? Because again, like ethically or ideologically, I don't know, it doesn't feel like the right move to support things that you disagree with, right? Like, if we just go pure accelerationist theory, be like, well, you know, I'm waving the flag for the WEF and for the political class and for the you know, I wave the flag a bit for the money printing, but you know what I mean? Versus is the balance between acceleration and inspiration, is it solely opting out of all those things that contribute to, or is it opting out and opting in simultaneously? Is it opting out of all the different things that, you know, permit the existing status quo to maintain itself, while devoting all of your energy and all your resources and all your, you know, capacity in various kinds to building this new system?
I'm not even sure where, if I'd like, you know, necessarily vote for Trudeau or any of this stuff, but I just think in like, letting things continue to go that way will end up orange pilling more people, like the trucker convoy in Canada a couple years ago. Yeah. Like, that orange pilled more people, right? When those kind of events happen, it wakes people up. If they just kept everybody comfortable and in the comfort zone and keep the population all sedated with their Netflix and everything, when people are comfortable, they're not going to aspire for any sort of change. So I think there has to be some sort of boiling point, you know, maybe not to the point of nuclear war, I'm not advocating for that, but it has to reach some sort of point where people are uncomfortable, really uncomfortable with the way things that are going.
Man, can you even imagine what that must be? Because I look around the world today and I'm like, how are the majority of people buying into this absolute upside down madness everywhere? Yeah. And yet here we are.
By fiat though, like supports reality, right? Like all the ESG score, all the ESG scores that makes every major company promote all this woke stuff. They're losing money doing it, but why do they keep doing it? It's because it's connected to BlackRock. They're connected with the money printer. So they can afford to just bail these companies out, keep pushing more and more money into them, even though they're losing money. So they promote this stuff. Fiat food, like low energy food, lowers your level of consciousness. Like your prefrontal cortex isn't going to be able to run optimally off fiat foods, right? The printing of money, fiat, it literally distorts reality. It lowers people's time preference or hires people's time preference. It lowers the conscious ability of the entire population. So because of fiat, people can't think clearly. If you look back to like every civilization that's collapsed, pretty much correlated with the debasement of money. And there's a correlation between a lot of this woke stuff, the focus on gender identity, gender politics, culture wars, all that kind of stuff. You can trace that stuff back to the Roman times. So because fiat is distorting that reality, fiat has to end for people to come out of that, right?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think there's a lot of there's a lot of similarities to, let's say, like Weimar culturally as to what's happening now. Apparently, I haven't dug too far into that, but I've seen a lot of interesting examples. And of course, you know, like corruption or untruth or noise in the base layer is going to create a facade, a delusion on all the things that it contributes to. And the, you know, it's the base layer because it contributes to so many things, institutions and culture and politics and everything. And so when you have untruth down there, you get it up there, and then you wind up in a world that is, you know, broadly an illusion or a delusion, you know, maybe not 100% obviously, but like to a large degree. And culture is very much an extension of our consciousness. And of course we rely on culture for triangulating our own sanity, you know, because that's all the inputs, that's all the data, that's all the signal that we're taking in to orient ourselves in the world, to understand ourselves, to understand the world and determine how we're going to move through it. And if those signals we're getting are so distorted and giving us a false signal, then if we're going to create a mental map internally that is equally false, and that's going to cause all sorts of problems for the individual, that's going to create problems socially, everywhere. And of course, that's what we're seeing now, right? That's just on display everywhere. And, you know, the broader point, the point that I take away, or just on the point about the truckers protest, it's remarkable to me, to your point, is not even just in Canada, but I've talked to so many people all around the world who even like, it wasn't even really the COVID years that woke them up necessarily. It was literally that example that just kind of jogged them out of their, you know, I hate to say it, but kind of like normie mindset, and be like, cause them to think quite differently about how all this works. The, you know, politics and banking and money and power and authority in the world today, like that was really a salient catalyst for them to rethink how everything works and how it ought to work. You know, it's remarkable how one thing like that, because when it was happening, that was my impression. I didn't think it would have any sort of broader effect politically in Canada. I thought it would kind of go the way it went. But what I did think was amazing was just the size of the groundswell and the attention that it got and how that might impact people's minds. And, you know, obviously it did.
Well, what I think though is that when that was happening, you know, that's kind of the right wing archetype. Most of those people, some of them I'm sure got orange pilled, but most of the people I'd assume that were taking part in the trucker protest, they're like, we want Pierre Poilievre to come into power. We want inflation to go back to 2%. We want to put another statist in charge that agrees with our the way that we see things. Mm-hmm. Right? They just want another statist to come in that agrees with them. Where with right. Bitcoin, we don't want any statist. We want money separated from state, and that's the main point. Mm-hmm. And how does that happen unless fiat collapses? If that can go slow and more people get hurt in the long run, or it can go quickly and our children will be better off for it.
Yeah, I think the main point or thrust of the accelerationist perspective is what you just said, is because so many people will come to appreciate a problem, but they haven't yet crossed the chasm of realizing that the solution is out of their current paradigm, right? They haven't shifted the Overton window basically yet to realize that the solution is, as you say, not just a politician who's more oriented towards your worldview or your perspective. That is not the solution. A solution is entirely different. And to your point, that one is really hard to get people to consider and to shift to. Like, you know, the phrase I often use is like, as many do, nobody's coming to save you, right? Like that means that you have to save yourself. And so that means you got to stop thinking that it's Poilievre or RFK or DeSantis or Trump or whomever, because doing that, you know, you may get some improvements in circumstance for a period of time, but the general trend is still, the train is still heading into the same destination, basically. And so, you know, that's the one that's really hard to communicate, which is the whole point behind this sort of theory, is that like only the pain is going to communicate it. So you might as well hurry up and get going with the pain. I'm an optimist in a sense, I guess, because I think, like, I don't know, there has to be a way that we can get through to people and it with that message. And yeah, you're right. Most people, you know, watch the trucker protest and it was more about changing their political views, yeah, not their monetary or, you know, views, let's say. But some people did, you know, some people got interested in Bitcoin as a result of that. And I feel like it's somewhat incumbent upon us to find ways to help shift that paradigm for people so that they can see that, you know, and I'm not even saying don't engage in the political process, because it's not nothing to have a somewhat of an improved, you know, circumstance. Like, let's say the last 2 years, what if COVID didn't kind of wane like it did, but it ramped up to the next level, and, you know, people weren't allowed to leave their house or fly or do all this kind of stuff. Is it better that things normalized a little bit? You know, like, would you?
Yeah. So they backtracked, right? Because they saw like, oh, some people are getting angry. So like I was saying with the frog boiling and water analogy, the water got too hot.
Right.
People started to realize what was going on. So they slowed it down, so there wouldn't be like a revolution overnight.
Yeah. But the point is a very important one, is that as long as these sorts of walkbacks and these concessions are made, and they take two steps forward and one step back, as long as people are convinced that these concessions are going to somehow fundamentally change things, then they're not going to be inspired sufficiently to actually engage in the behavior that's actually going to change things. Yeah. You know, assuming that we're right about this whole Bitcoin thesis again, which is at least an asterisk against the theory, right? Because one can never be certain about the future. And that makes, you know, all of your calculations about how you want to act and things you want to pursue, that it influences those calculations. But yeah, it's a tough one, man. It's a tough one.
How would you see hyper-Bitcoinization playing out then?
What's that?
How would you see hyper-Bitcoinization playing out?
It's so hard to project into the future, especially in the era we're in. I mean, 5 years from now, I think the world is probably going to look quite a bit different than it does today. But I suspect it's going to kind of continue to play out as it has. Now, it may accelerate itself.
On hits, people get interested in it for the pump your bag sort of reason.
Right. Some people stay, the pie grows slowly over time. Now, who knows if
it goes up and people get it, they go down, some people will go down the rabbit hole, like more,
right.
More people that fit that archetype. But
now I don't necessarily believe that fiat will persist long enough for that to be a nice kind of stable trajectory to get the world's population into it, because I think the pain is going to come one way or the other.
Yeah. But to use language to try and orange pill the people that don't fit that archetype, there's a million different ways you could string a pitch for it together. But like language is
work.
An operating system of the mind, right? Mm-hmm. And if it's incompatible with a certain type of person, it'll just be too difficult, right?
Yeah, no, you're right. And part of this is like, is that what we should be striving for? You know, many Bitcoiners have pointed out before, like, you know, we shouldn't be trying to orange pill the masses. We shouldn't be trying to, can't remember the quote about like getting, you know, convincing all the sheep, but waking the lions sort of thing. And I'm receptive to that because you're not going to hit 100% of anything ever. And so, you know, should you just be kind of aiming for the low hanging fruit and then with them cooperating and building a market, a society, a culture that is broadly speaking, more truthful, more peaceful, more productive, more prosperous, and having that be kind of the magnet that over a longer course of time brings people in. Like maybe we're engaging in a 300-year process here and not a 30-year process. I think we all have to at least be somewhat at peace with the possibility of that prospect. I don't think it's probable.
I would say I do think it could be 300 years because America is about to collapse. Like the dollar's currently destabilizing. Every empire throughout history hasn't lasted longer than 250 years. Their empire's at like 247 or something like that right now. Like it can't go on longer. And when the current day and age collapses, because that's the way it's heading, like there's no way it's not going to collapse, this current world system we have going on right now. Like you've read the fourth turning, right? How everything resets roughly.
I know the theory. I haven't read it.
Like there's no way we're not going for another global reset. So we could.
But the question is does Bitcoin swoop in, or is there something else to fill the void?
I think it's the only. It'll be the one thing in history that changes that reset from switching to another empire that rises up, another global power, because how can a nation state propagate or project their power without being able to print money, right? Once the money is left out of the hands of human control, how will they be able to print money to fund endless wars or to spend it on programs that are completely, they wouldn't be able to do without fiat, right? So, I see it going the way of the sovereign individual. The current system collapses and then kind of Bitcoin swoops in. It's the Noah's Ark. People go into that and then there's no other nation state that rises. It'll be smaller city states and like we go into the age of the sovereign individual.
Yeah, I mean, I'm down, right? Yeah. But I think the state will certainly atrophy once they don't have a magical money printer anymore. But I think there'll be lots of creative efforts to, well, one, maintain it in some capacity, even if it's not in the current, you know, instantiation that we're familiar with, or establish it by other means, you know. And as you say, for Bitcoin holders, their wealth will be in a place that, you know, can't be confiscated, and the returns on violence will be decreased as a result. And you'll have the sovereign individual thesis playing out. But some people will still be trapped within the system. They won't recognize. I mean, again, look at our world today. There's, you know, an infinite number of reasons to poke your head up and be like, oh, wow, things are really messed up. And most people don't. So regardless of how correct we might be on the Bitcoin thesis, still some people will be left behind by their own choice, admittedly. Yeah. But they will be left behind. And the question I have for you, I guess, is what?
That's the free market, though.
No, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just stating a fact. And my question for you is, what system do you think they will be in? So let's say there's a portion of people doing the sovereign individual thing, jurisdictional arbitrage, competition, you know, all that kind of stuff. But some people will just not be ready to let go and they'll stay in the proverbial matrix. How do you think? I mean, I think it's entirely possible that just
they want to work.
The money printer prints something else.
The only people offering them jobs will be people that hodled Bitcoin. And then because they've proven the track record of like, I know how to allocate my resources properly, the people with the capital will be Bitcoiners in 20, 30 years. If this thesis plays out, if they want to work, if they want a job, they're going to get paid in Bitcoin, right? Like the businesses will be Bitcoiners.
Well, let's put it this way. I think the Bitcoin parallel economy will absolutely outcompete, and capital creation will be much faster there. And so there will be more and better jobs being created there. But I guess my point is that we have situations like that today, right? Like you can make more money in Switzerland than you can in Venezuela, but some people just can't get out of Venezuela. And so when the US dollar crashes and, you know, the next thing, the SDR currency is brought up, or the digital yuan or whatever, and people are still to some degree trapped within those systems. Again, I think over time, the Bitcoin parallel system will continue siphoning wealth and resources away from it. and the ladder will atrophy. And that, you know, in the ideal, that would happen relatively smoothly without any major conflict. But I, you know, my question was basically, what do you think happens to the people trapped inside? And I think the unfortunate answer is, well, they're going to be trapped inside until they do something to untrap themselves.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they'll never realize, but I think it just comes down to the incentive, right? Like they can stay in a system where they're working for something that is absolutely worthless while there's a city a few miles away that's on the Bitcoin standard, and they'll look over and be like, oh, those guys seem like they're doing a whole lot better.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So what does that mean? Do you have these conversations with peers in your social life currently? And what do they think of your thoughts on this sort of stuff?
The Bitcoin circle that I'm in, we kind of came up with this idea together, and I volunteered to write the article. So yeah, they all agree pretty much.
And what, you know, you said you're 21?
Yeah, I'm turning 21 in a couple months. Yeah.
So what does a 21-year-old with this type of perspective, what do they attempt to pursue in the world? Like what's on your horizon?
Goals, yeah. My goals, I like writing. I want to continue writing articles. Like I have a few on, I have one, the debasement of money is the cause of clown world, Bitcoin's relation to psychedelics. Got a few more in the works, like, you know, at the intersection of like philosophy, Austrian economics.
And is that something you want to make a career or?
Yeah, it is. Like unsure yet. I work a part-time job, but I'm like really enjoying this writing thing. I'd like to turn it into like podcasts, YouTube videos, and make something of myself. And that, like, Bitcoin's my passion in life. I know that's the way that I saw this is the best possible way that I could contribute value to Bitcoin. And I just hope to continue doing that. I'm gaining a better understanding it doing it myself as well. Sure. So yeah. What? I'm a fan of your writings too as well. So
thank you.
A lot on the podcast.
Thanks. Yeah, I haven't done much recently in terms of articles because I've been working on a book which takes up a lot of my time. And but I'm finally enjoying the process because the early stages were difficult. But I'm looking forward to getting that out. But I guess one of the reasons why I ask those questions is with someone who has the type of mindset that we've been discussing in terms of acceleration theory, how does one act in the world? You know, because you could say that, as we were kind of saying the balance earlier, like writing articles and producing content, basically, as you know, revealing or exploring the benefits, the connections between Bitcoin and other things. I mean, that's kind of more on the inspirational side of things. It's not the pain side of things, right? Yeah. And so, you know, is there anything materially in your life that you would say is like directed by that accelerationist perspective?
You mean like actions I'm personally taking towards influence?
I guess so. Yeah. I'm just curious how it shows up in behavior.
Honestly, other than writing this article, not yet, but
campaigning for Trudeau.
I'm honestly undecided about. Yeah, like I might just not vote because it doesn't really matter anyways. But yeah, I'm undecided about that. I just really thought this was an interesting thesis to follow in a thought experiment, and it does make a lot of sense. But yeah, like you were saying with the train, with the ethical dilemma of pulling the lever on the train, like yeah, it is a very difficult decision to make when it comes to actually executing some sort of like action.
Yeah, I think a lot of people wind up having that perspective, which, you know, again, logically you might say, well, isn't a slightly better situation better than a worse situation? You know, definitionally the answer is yes, but there's an element of, you know, a lot of Bitcoiners might say, well, I don't want to, you know, tacitly like accept the system. I don't want to participate in that. Even if I think, you know, DeSantis would be better than Biden, I'm like, you know, I just want to abstain from any sort of involvement, any sort of stain on me of condoning that system. And therefore I'm going to exclusively focus on the things that I can do in my direct life to insulate myself from that and also draw resources away from it. And I'm, you know, that's a fair
politics, that's a fair is position. Like it's all pretty stupid. Both sides suck and they're just a popularity contest.
Well, I think, you know, my perspective is that I have fallen into the trap before of, you know, just being angry and frustrated at so many things and so many people and directing that blame outward. And I try to, you know, keep that in check. But, you know, life experience has me believing that most people are good and well-intended. Like the vast majority of people, there's not many like true Dr. Evils out there. Yeah, you know?
It's the politics psyops people into hating each other.
Right. And the incentives enforce that behavior. Right. And so people are just responding to their incentives. And then the social license allows them to make decisions and act in ways that they might not act in isolation, all else being equal. And you get this, like, you know, this clown world that we've been discussing. And so I think what I'm curious about is on a Bitcoin standard, you know, I talk about this a bunch on the podcast, but so there's good people, there's well-intended people. Now, maybe everyone who winds up in politics has too big of an ego, they're sociopaths.
Yeah, it attracts that type of person that isn't well-intentioned because they're obsessed with other people's opinions of them and they just want to win
a podcast. Exactly. But I think as we've been discussing, the major issue with politics today is that it has become such an outsized concern or influence in people's lives and the culture more broadly because they have infinite access to capital through the money printer. Yeah. Right. And so, you know, everything ends up deferring to that because it's an infinite source of wealth and capital and actualization in the world. And so that's why it's destroying the nuclear family, because it's it can so easily say, we'll take care of health. We'll take care of meaning. Yeah. We'll take care of your child. We'll take care of the elderly. Yeah. And then you disintegrate everything that was important about the family and the things that held it together and why it was important to hold it together. And so remove the money printer, right? Remove the source of funding for that thing. And I have to think that politics atrophies tremendously. Now, what I'm curious about is in such a scenario, let's just say whether it's 30 years or 300 years in the future where that's the case and Bitcoin is one and very few people are left in the ex-Bitcoin world, the non-Bitcoin world, what will governance look like then? Most governance, I think, will happen on an emergent basis through our capacity to coordinate. What's that?
Have to be on a much smaller scale.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm just curious if it's an entirely different, if it's like in a different form entirely, you know, because
it's more of a business, because like you could have one city, like city state, you know, because you can have a government, like, you know, I'm okay with electing a leader in a city of 500,000 people. Right. And they're like, oh, I'll offer these services. Like you can do this payment plan where you get this level of membership and we'll give you garbage collection and policing service and whatever. You can choose this tier and we'll offer these services. And if you don't like these services, then move somewhere else.
Yeah.
Or pay it all and you can live here. But if you want this level of services of, you know, garbage collection, policing, water, like water supply, whatever, you pay a certain like tier level of services.
Yeah. Like again, this is the free private city, sovereign individual, you know, way things will play out. And Bitcoin is so fascinating in that it exerts its influence, a similar influence on the individual and on the familial and the social level. Like it's basically just causing people to conform to what is most true. And so in the case of jurisdictions, you know, as you say, if this jurisdiction over here is offering that, but then that one is offering that, well, if everyone can easily move without much loss, then they're going to do that. Yeah, and that process over time is going to improve all jurisdictions. And we're really going to get to see what governance and what cities and all these sort of stuff, quote unquote, should look like based on all of our emergent decision-making. The question that I come back to, which I'll throw over to you, is so no money printer, much smaller governments competing on services. What becomes the force that, or the authority that enforces property rights that are outside of Bitcoin? And of course, I believe that the value of property outside of Bitcoin will be diminished dramatically because most will be siphoned into the Bitcoin world because of all of its features. But there will be things like land, and there will be things like homes, there will be things like productive land and cattle and all that kind of stuff. And so what kind of authority will enforce contracts or ownership rights in the meat space world
outside of the Bitcoin network?
Yeah.
I think it would be personal responsibility, you know, like people would have to take responsibility for their own stuff. And in a world where there's no state protecting you, if you'd have to take up arms or someone tries to steal your property, that's kind of on you. It's not, you call the police or anything. I think, yeah, there's some states would offer those services if you're paying for it, but it would come down to personal responsibility.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's an impossible question, right? We'll find out. But it's one of the ones I'm, you know, the existing nuclear stockpile is another interesting one that I think, like, how does that get sorted out? And then someone mentioned recently that, it's a danger, right? That the world, that these psychopaths have so many nuclear bombs that could, destroy the world 100 times over. We recently discussed, I can't remember with who on the show, that like, maybe they all get decommissioned for small modular nuclear reactors to mine Bitcoin because that's the better incentive. And, it's not a bad theory.
That sounds like a great idea, actually. I've never thought about that. What would happen to the nuclear arsenal? Because, I mean, like, yeah, to make the worst case argument about acceleration theory, if it comes to that point, the statists are just like panicking, like, okay, fuck it. We'll just kill everybody then. Like, we lost. We'll take everyone down with us. That would be worst case scenario, but that sounds like a great solution, like decommissioning it and then taking the uranium and whatever and using it to mine Bitcoin.
And it might even be an argument for non-accelerationist theory, because you could say, like, acceleration theory taken to its extreme maybe is more destabilizing in the short term, and you might increase the likelihood of that nuclear war. Yeah. Whereas if it's more incremental, then these states, you know, your Russias and your Indias and whomever else who have these bombs, they're feeling the pain of the failure of fiat, and they're saying, like, what's our option here? And maybe they say, let's start decommissioning some of those things, using that energy to mine Bitcoin. And that's a way to, they think it's a way to preserve their power, but really it's just a way to support the network and kind of sow the seeds of their own demise. Yeah. But in the short term, it kind of tricks them.
Yeah. But I mean, either way, the money printer has to blow up in their face first. The inflation has to get so bad that it caught, like, that's the pendulum swing. Inflation gets bad, it flows into Bitcoin. I think, yeah, there's the argument for nuclear war and all that kind of stuff, but at the end of the day, the money printer has to be sped up, which is the result of these, like, incompetent policies.
Mm-hmm. What's I don't follow much of what's going on in Canada these days. I assume it's very clownish, as it always has been, but
pretty bad.
what's going on in Canada?
Well, there's no COVID anymore. Like, that hasn't been a thing for a year or two now. Just a lot of woke bullshit. Trudeau's just an expert at gaslighting. He's a damn good gaslighter. Promoting a bunch of LGBTQ policies and stuff like that. But I mean, at least the COVID stuff went away, so that's nice.
Do you anticipate sticking around in Canada?
I'd like to move around a bit. I'd like to travel the world more. I know you're from out east, right?
Yeah, I'm from Newfoundland originally.
Okay, nice. Yeah, I'd like to travel the States, South America, Europe.
But are you one of these people who, you know, basically thinks it can be saved and there's something worth saving and you want to stick around and fight the good fight, or are you happy to sovereign individual your way to the best where you're treated best?
I'm not sure, you know, I have a lot of friends here I'd like to stick around for, but I, you know, like, got to get out of the comfort zone, maybe, like, you know, move somewhere for a couple of years, experience something new, get a taste of new ways of life, new cultures, new experiences, and then, you know, take it from there, I guess. I'm not entirely sure, to be honest, but I know travel in the future, that's for sure.
What's the current, state of Bitcoin in Canada? Because I know some shitcoin exchanges left recently because maybe the regulations became a little bit harder.
I think Ontario kicked Binance out a while ago. We got a pretty strong community in Ontario, though. So for Southern
Bitcoin,
Ontario. Yeah. There's the Canadian Bitcoin Conference in 2 weeks. The Chelsea Hotel in Toronto. I think it might be sold out now, but all the listeners can definitely go check that out. Southern Ontario has a really strong community of Maxis.
And have regulations been the same for a while? Nothing's changed in that department?
I know like ShakePay just did this, but I think all the other exchanges in Canada have to do the same, but like more questions. It's more, they're just basically making more KYC regulations to or know more about the customers and everything. They're making it like, they're trying to make it harder. They're squeezing the on-ramps. Right. They're making it harder to get Bitcoin, which like influences new ways of non-KYC. I know like Bull Bitcoin, which is sponsoring the Canadian Bitcoin conference. They're a big leader in creating non-KYC ways of acquiring Bitcoin. But yeah.
You can go to the post office now, right?
What was that?
You can go to the post office now and for under orders under $1,000, I think there's no KYC. You just buy a voucher.
Yeah, or there's ATMs. I'm unfamiliar with that way, but I know like some Bitcoin ATMs offer non-KYC.
Yeah, I think it was Bull recently launched it. And so I think it's for under $1,000. You just go in, you buy a voucher at the post office, and then you use it to buy Bitcoin on Bull, I believe. And you can do it with like a non-KYC account. And so.
Yeah, under $1,000, I think. Yeah.
That's incredible. I'm kind of shocked that that loophole exists in the Canadian government allow that
yet, but hopefully that continues on.
And what about liquidity in non-KYC stuff like BISC? It was always historically very low in Canada. Is that still the case?
I wouldn't know too much about that, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah.
There it would be definitely nice to see more, you know, peer-to-peer exchanges pop up, but it seems like there's a regulatory. Well, I don't know if there's a crackdown or just the tightening noose of regulatory pressure, but it seems to get in the way of that.
Yeah, I wouldn't know too much about that, but yeah.
Well, what else? Was there anything else you wanted to cover, or did you want to dig into anything before we shut it down?
Yeah, sure. You can find me on Substack. I try to write new articles every month. You can follow me on Twitter. Hopefully we can do that. Yeah, I know maybe we can do this again next time I release an article or something.
Sure.
Yeah, I think we got it. We got enough for today. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on, and thanks for hitting up the Calendly link and putting yourself in, and congrats on starting to write about your thoughts on Bitcoin. You know, the first one is always the big step, and you know, I look forward to reading more of your stuff in the future.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
All right, brother. Take care.
Take care. You too. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh,